All right, welcome back, New River Valley. This is Mark Tapp with Keith Weldon's, and you're listening to Am Hodgepodge. So it dawned on me that we finished that 20-minute segment, had that music in the Ball Over Beer segment, but didn't tell anybody that it was Gary Glitter and the Rock and Roll Part 2.
Yeah.
So I felt like we needed to.
Part 1's way worse. Back.
Yeah, Part 1 is where he sings, and the music's a little different. No. Less synthesizer, maybe.
It's still kind of a major letdown.
But it wasn't. Yeah, I'm not a big. Well, to put it into perspective, I'm on Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and Roll Part 2 has 106 million, I guess it's views.
Sure.
Rock and Roll Part 1 has 13
yeah,
million.
Yeah, that's valid.
Yeah.
So I was watching television. I do that periodically. And I was watching this show, and it had, and the show doesn't matter, but it had Gordon Ramsay, the chef on it.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how to make the perfect hamburger. That was a question that was asked to him.
Okay.
So I'm going to give the Gordon Ramsay's perfect recipe. Now, he was like, take all these different types of meats and you blend them and pork and a certain amount of fat. But I'm going to distill it down to this, 80-20. Okay?
Yeah. So just have some fat.
Go with 80-20.
You cook most of it off anyway.
Yeah, go 80-20. And then you put it in a bowl and you just put in the palm. So like if you have the palm of your hand, like what water might be able to sit in, you need to put red pepper flakes. So that much red pepper flakes that would fit in the palm.
Okay.
So it's like a pound of ground beef, palm of crushed red pepper flakes, throw it in there. Same amount of garlic salt, and then salt and pepper. And then mix the whole thing up, make your patty, put it on. High heat, extremely high heat on both sides. And then that same heat, take a pat of butter. A stick of butter, excuse me.
Oh.
The whole thing.
Now you're getting a little crazy.
And then you just keep, you cook the rest of it with just the butter.
Yeah.
Okay. The other option is to, in that same patty, take a pat of butter.
Yeah.
And before you close your patty, before you close the meat and you make the patties, put one pat of butter on the inside and then pull it apart and make them.
Yep.
And I'm going to do that with my next one.
It's actually about the same way as high-end steak places cook their steak.
Correct.
So butter makes everything better.
He says that's the difference between a $5 hamburger and a $25 hamburger. That's exactly what he said. He was how can some places charge $25? And he said this. Seasoning.
Yeah.
No marinades, but seasoning and then butter. And then you take the bun and you take the bun and you dip it into the butter and then you put the bun on the skillet to brown the inside. He says that's required because so much juice is going to come out of your that the caramelized bun will soak up the juice and not get soggy.
That sounds good. I usually get a little too lazy to do the buns.
I love doing the buns. Do the buns.
It's a pretty easy process.
Yeah, very easy. So now I'm going to try that.
All right.
All right, and I'll let you know.
Let us all know.
Yeah.
So you're from Texas, right?
Yes.
Do you really say, like if somebody says, are you from Texas, where are you from?
When they say, where were you raised or where were you born?
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, if I'm asked, I will say, well, I live in Radford, but I was born in.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I'm going to play something for you.
Okay.
Every Texan is a writer of sorts, even if technically they don't write it all down. Some tell their stories on the wide open plains, and some find it in the bright city skylines. But no matter how big or small, every tale leads back to the same place. For the folks of Shiner, a little town built on the big dreams of just over 2,000 people, their story is written right here. Shinerbach. It's a Texas thing.
All right. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Does it do anything for you?
No. Not. Oh, I mean. Man. I mean, I like Shinerbach a lot, but, you know, I mean, I don't seek it out. I'll tell you this, when you have one, if you haven't had one for a while, they are delicious.
It is a good beer. Pretty much all of their beers are pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of a strange commercial.
Yeah.
I guess it would maybe if you were in Texas and they only played it in Texas.
Right.
Maybe, but...
Did you see it somewhere else?
It was just a...
A YouTube's commercial?
Yeah. So, Jesse Flemons, Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
He was Todd in Breaking Bad, and he was...
Was he the one talking on that?
Friday Night Lights also, yeah. So, okay. That was him doing that commercial, and I just kind of found it a little bit... You know, sometimes you hear an ad, and you think, well, why did they pay that advertising agency anything?
Right.
So, I've got...
It sounds like they're just trying to make... Shinerbach macho.
Yeah. It's like he's sort of the Marlboro Man of beer. I don't know. Did you know that we missed National Beer Day?
No, it was April 7th.
Yeah, so we missed it.
That was a
few days ago.
Sunday.
Yeah.
No, I didn't miss
you
it.
You didn't miss it.
No, that's the day of...
I missed it. We just didn't talk about
that's
it
That's the day
the
that Prohibition ended. And,
yeah, I was going to ask you, do you know a little bit about National Beer Day?
1933, and it was when the beer could make 3.2.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's about all I know. But it's always the same day. It's April 7th.
It is.
It's April 7th, 3.2.
FDR was the one that
beer day.
Wrote the law in 1933. He's the one that's passed the national law. I thought this was kind of interesting. So he passed a federal law.
Right.
And then encouraged states to follow suit.
Correct.
And National Beer Day was actually the first celebration of National Beer Day took place. You want to take a guess at what year?
Probably 1946.
I would have gone that far back, too. It was actually 2009.
Really? Okay.
And it was a local Virginia resident, Justin Smith, who started the day in honor of the Cullen-Harrison Act, which is the state act in Virginia that allowed the sale of 3.2 beer.
Gotcha.
I think they called it mild beer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of mild, this is anything but... mild. So I was just looking for beer stories, and I ran across a story about Andre the Giant.
Okay.
Have you heard anything about him and beer?
No, I actually thought he was dead.
I'm not sure whether he is or not. I actually think you're right. I think he has passed away. But that doesn't mean while he was living, he wasn't drinking beer.
Sure.
It wouldn't surprise me a bit.
He just picked up the keg.
Seeing how much beer he drank, it wouldn't surprise me a bit that he had passed. What surprises me is that he lived as long as he did. So,
okay.
So do you want to take any guess at how tall he was and how heavy he was?
7'6", 4'15".
7'4", so okay. You're close. 5'20".
I was going to actually say 5, and then I just backed off.
500's a big man.
That is huge.
And Andre has enough. So none of these are Guinness Book of Records. As a matter of fact, in 2004, Guinness stopped recording beer drinking records.
Okay.
Which makes sense. And of course, Guinness Book of World Records hails from the brewer Guinness.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so Andre the Giant has a number of occasions where other friends witnessed him drinking beer at enormous quantities. And I believe the largest one with witnesses, he had and I know you kind of followed some of the wrestling
mm-hmm.
stuff. Do you remember Mike Graham and Dusty Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
Michael Hayes?
Mm-hmm.
So the three of them were drinking beer with Andre. and he drank 156 beers in one evening.
That is ridiculous.
14.6 gallons of beer. Now, when you see a can of beer in his hands,
it looks ridiculously tiny.
Yeah. You think, well, maybe he could do 156 of those. But
looks like the hat or the thimble from Monopoly.
That's right. Yeah, he's a very big man. But 156 beers, how does a liver get through one of those?
Well, I mean, so if it's 156 and it's 100 calories per, that's 10,500 calories. Did I do my math right? Yeah, 10.
Well, so he
1,500 calories.
Yeah. They
15,000 calories.
They believe he had 7,000 calories a day from alcohol, from beer.
Okay. That's 15,000 calories then.
Yeah.
If I did my math right.
That's staggering.
Just from the beer.
Yeah.
So, meaning you're telling me he averaged half of that
a day, yeah.
Man, he must not have drank water at all.
And of course, I mean, you and I both, we could attest if he was drinking Miller Lite or Coors Light or something like that. I mean, it's close to water.
It's very close.
Yeah.
There's enough alcohol in there to kill the impurities and make it safe.
Yeah. All right. You want one more story? Mm-hmm. Maybe something we can talk about?
Yeah, go for it.
So neither one of us, I believe, has any knowledge of this group, but it was a news article I ran across. It's a company called Monk's Kettle. It's a brewery and a food place in San Francisco.
Okay.
So first I'm going to just throw this out, and it's hard to do this in this day and age. Maybe if you kind of think back 5 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe. If I were to mention San Francisco to you, mm-hmm. what would some of the thoughts be that would come to your mind?
The on-air ones are trolleys, the bridge, the actual bay, hills, row homes. These are the things I can say on radio.
All right.
So if it's not any of these, you can stop me.
Anything qualitative? Like,
think
back 5, 10 years ago. Not today.
Tech and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Tech. Yeah.
Wealth.
Okay. Yeah. Now, if I said Oakland,
mm-hmm.
what would you think?
Well, I know it's got a rap for decay, crime, kind of, well, there's a reason why it's on the other side of the bridge. That's what everyone says. It's it's the other side of the bridge. So it's the least desirable part.
Yeah. Those were kind of the things that came to my mind, too. Mm-hmm. So Monk's Kettle, after 16 years in San Francisco, has announced that they are moving to Oakland.
Okay.
And this may get into maybe some of the media scrubbed some of their explanation. They did not mention the decay in the neighborhood as one of the reasons they're moving.
That they're leaving.
Right.
Okay.
They did mention that a couple of things had happened. Number one, their lease came due.
Sure.
But I got to think that
this kind of plays in with what we were talking about, where you spend a lot of money. We talked about with other breweries where you spend so much money, then you help build up the neighborhood. And then when your lease renews, you can't afford their lease anymore.
Yeah. Now, I got to think that maybe leases are not any more expensive in San Francisco simply because there is a little bit of a movement out of San
Francisco.
Yeah,
but they'll take those properties and then turn them into homes.
Yeah. So there's the lease came due or came up, and they mentioned that a couple things have happened. Number one, in tech, the trend has been with younger workers to have very short-term contracts with their employers.
Okay.
So they don't get vested in the community.
Sure.
It's a one-year contract. They might hit a couple of real high-end restaurants, and then they leave. They don't find a home in one of the pubs or restaurants. The other thing that happened, and this is sort of post-COVID fallout, I think, is the delivery concept, the delivery app concept. Mm-hmm. So people now will order a burger to be delivered to them from this institution, but they won't come in and hang out with a couple of friends and drink beers. And so that's hurting them as well. But I just thought it was really interesting. And going back to what you just said about building up a neighborhood and then moving to another neighborhood or leaving, it's just sort of an irony that strikes me that, you know, here we talked about this 5-6 years ago, how one of the common themes in urban rejuvenation was a brewery.
Right.
And now they're I feel like maybe some of it is a result of that, the leases are going up, but you're also seeing the blight come back.
Correct.
And it almost seems like it's as a business owner, it's unsurmountable. It's the kind of blight you can't fix.
It is. Yeah, you've got barely enough control over your own four walls and real estate. You can't control the other, and you know it's a problem that goes from locality to locality, which is that, you know, there's a reason some properties will never be fixed up, and some it's because the property owner doesn't believe it's worth it, and then there's another that it could be that the property owner doesn't want it to be worth it. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the tax assessed value is based off of the physical and overall appearance, mechanical appearance. And so, you know, yeah, you throw money into it, great. Well, then your taxes go up on it significantly too. And then you have a death spiral that says, well, I put the money in it, I made it better, and the only thing you did was welcome me with an additional tax side on it. And so now I have to charge more to have someone stay in the building, and then that person can't pay that. So now I have a prettier building with no one in it.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck with the taxes. And this is this vicious cycle that you will see property owners get in. And when it gets out of control, then it's those famous areas that you see, whether they're in Baltimore or other places, where in Detroit, where it's just block after block after block after block after block, because no one can afford to fix it up. And by the way, if you do fix it up, there's no assurance that you're going to be protected from outside sources. I mean, there is robberies and things, and if you're the only light on, well, people will be attracted to that light, and next thing you know, you're the convenience store or whatever that is having problems, and yet that's your model. So yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do know this, Oakland is far more of a community than San Francisco. So if they're looking for an investment in the community, Oakland is far better. It does have higher rates of, and I've gone through some of those things, and that's political leadership. But the community, the people themselves, the people who are born in Oakland, they tend to stay in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yep. I think maybe we'll end here and then bring in Jesse and Katie from the Redbud Festival.
Yeah, that's going on today. Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. All right, everybody. Stick with us. You're listening to
AM Hodgepodge.